The Copper Creek Pack was formed this spring when wolves 2309, that's the male, and 2312, the female, bred and produced four pups, the first pack from our reintroduction effort. This spring, the male adult wolf was involved in multiple depredations in Middle Park, removing the male at that time while he was the sole source of food for the female as she was denning would have likely been fatal to the pups and counter to the restoration mandate we have. When some non-lethal management methods were deployed, including carcass management and range rider deployment, the depredations were reduced from mid-May to mid-July. When depredations began again after the pack moved to the rendezvous site, CPW worked closely with internal and external wildlife biologists, CPW's wildlife veterinarians, federal partners, ranchers, to create a relocation plan for this unique situation that was in the best interest of the wolves and the Grand County producers. The 10J rule allows CPW, which is a designated agent of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to take the wolves in a variety of circumstances. The capture phase of the relocation plan began August 22nd and concluded September 8th. All six animals were successfully captured, evaluated, and moved to a facility for respite and continued monitoring and evaluation. The male, upon capture, was found in poor conditions with several injuries to his right leg unrelated to the capture. CPW staff administered antibiotics in an effort to address infections from his injuries and replaced the non-functioning collar with a functioning collar. Based on his condition, we believe that it was unlikely that he would have survived very long in the wild. 4 days after transport, CPW's wolf team biologists received a mortality signal from 2309's collar, and the animal was confirmed to be deceased. A third party will perform a full necropsy and report that back. These animals are still under the exclusive ownership and possession and control of CPW and are being temporarily held. CPW will evaluate the progress of the female and the four pups over the coming weeks and work to ensure that all animals are in good condition. There was no evidence that the four pups were involved in any of the livestock depredation incidents in Grant County. If it's determined that the pups can thrive, CPW does plan to release them when they will be adult-sized and able to hunt on their own or together in a pack. This approach gives CPW the opportunity to release them into the wild together so they can continue to contribute to the wolf restoration in Colorado. If CPW decides to re-release the adult female, she will be closely monitored. CPW will have conversations with local elected officials and landowners in possible release areas before any releases occur. We will apply the lessons we've learned in this case to continue to strengthen our reintroduction program. One critical next step is to invest a great deal of time alongside our partners with local communities to increase training and education around effective deployment of non-lethal techniques, developing site vulnerability assessments where we currently have or expect to have wolves, and to streamline the permit application process that helps livestock producers deploy non-lethal techniques. Our goal at the end of the day is to alter these wolf behaviors early and often, which is critical to avoiding and minimizing ongoing wolf-livestock conflicts. The performance and professionalism of our team and partners that carried out the operation is unrivaled. We safely captured all of the animals in the face of high levels of stress and uncertainty, allowing for the possibility of the female and the pups to be able to continue to contribute to the restoration of wolves in Colorado. I truly appreciate each member of our team, their expertise and professionalism. With that, we can take any questions that you may have.
And just a reminder again, Rachel will be calling on folks. So we do have a list in the back of all of our attendees. She will round robin and ask folks to prepare their question, and we'll unmute you on our end.
Okay, so we will first be taking a question from Meg Sawyers with Sky High News, followed by Spencer Wilson with CBS4, and then Tracy Ross with the Colorado Sun. So Meg, we will go ahead and start with you.
I was wondering, will the necropsy be released to the public?
Yes, and we anticipate that an average necropsy takes about 45 to 60 days to get results back. So we would anticipate that time frame, and that will definitely be public information.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer?
Hi there, guys. Thank you for taking our question. Wanted to ask, 20% of the original Colorado wolves that we dropped here are now dead. You said we're learning from this, as we've learned from other issues in the past with this plan. Do you think Coloradans would be justified in being concerned about how this plan has gone so far?
I would say natural mortality is always going to be part of this. I think it's hard for me to say that any of these are human caused. I mean, we had a mountain lion depredation. The male in this case, we think it was not human caused necessarily. And hopefully we will continue. We feel very confident about the future for releasing additional wolves over the next couple of years. So while I feel like we would be sitting here and saying, hey, all of our wolves are still alive and doing well, thriving, it's not lost on me. We do have the vast majority of our wolves here, like maybe not great in number, but they are doing very well. And these two particular adults just found themselves in a perfect storm.
Thank you.
Can I add to that, please? Do.
Yeah, I'd add to that too. I mean, these programs are challenging. It's not always easy to reintroduce species. Our Canada Lynx program began with not great success either. And so it was a lot of evaluations of different protocols and different kinds of ways of carrying out the operation. And I think that we're learning a lot about this. Wolf restoration is inherently challenging and difficult. And so we're in year one. It did not necessarily go particularly smoothly in the initial years in the Northern Rockies when wolf restoration happened there in the mid-90s. So there's lots of examples of learning and moving and improving along the way. So I'm not concerned about the overall success of the program.
So next we will have Tracy Ross, followed by Bella Biondini. And I apologize if I do not get pronounce your last names correctly. And then after that, we will have Mark Hines.
All right, thank you so much. We are wondering where the wolves are being held, and if the female is not released, will she remain there?
That is a place to protect the facility, private property owner identification, and listed species. We won't tell you where those animals are being held. And what I would say is we've been laser focused on the critical first step of this in the capture of all of those animals, including keeping the operation going several more nights to make sure that we weren't leaving any of the animals out there. And we now are shifting into what I would call like phase two of this operation, and we will shift our focus from the capture effort towards more specifically how are we getting the condition up for the animals that we have that we're holding currently, and then subsequent next steps on which animals are released and what potential release areas might be.
Next, we will have Bella. Just as a reminder, we are only taking one question just due to timing, and we want to make sure that we get all reporters a chance to ask questions. So Bella, go for it.
Hi all, I was just curious to know the time frame on release zones.
You want me to take that?
I didn't hear all the questions.
Can I clarify that? You said the timing for the release zones. Do you mean, is your question when the potential releases might happen or when we might have identified potential release areas?
When you might have identified potential release areas.
So on ongoing conversations, we will work to make those decisions shortly in the coming weeks, probably. We're not going to have a particular site necessarily. We always like to have a couple of areas for contingencies, whether it's bad weather or things like that. And I'm assuming that you're asking about for this winter's releases. And so we do have some general pool of ideas of locations as ideas, but nothing has been firmed up yet. But as those decisions are made or that list of potential sites is made, we'll engage in those local conversations to inform people about those decisions.
Thank you.
So next we will have Mark Hines, followed by Amy Hayden Marsh, followed by Marianne Goodland.
Thank you for taking my question. You said that the injuries evidently were not human caused. Do you have any idea or notion that they might have been caused either by a potential prey animal fighting back against the wolf, or in a conflict or fight with another wolf?
Probably too soon to tell. That the necropsy will give a lot more information. It does not look as though it was a kick injury from an ungulate or something like that. So it's probably another carnivore type animal attack, but we don't have any conclusion evidence yet.
Amy?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm Amy Hayden Marsh, and I'm unclear about what happened to the male adult wolf. You said, Mr. Davis, that all the wolves were moved to a facility, his collar was replaced, and then somebody noticed that the collar indicated that the wolf had died. Did he go to the facility, or was he released into the wild by himself? That's unclear.
He went to the facility and was there, I want to say, 3 or 4 days, and then his new collar gave a mortality signal to us. The facility staff confirmed that he was deceased.
Okay, so the facility must be a pretty big expanse of land is what I'm guessing.
So our next question comes from Marianne, followed by Julia Caulfield, and then Elena Alvarez.
Hi, thanks very much for hosting this today. Really appreciate it. If I understand correctly, and I want to clarify this, it sounds like the pups are going to be held at this facility until they reach adult size. If that's correct, is that so that you'll be able to collar them? Because one of the things that I keep hearing is, given that the pups aren't collared, they could be targets. How much of that was played into what you decided to do with these wolves?
So I can say that they are going to be held until they're adult size so that we can collar them. That's going to be really important. One, from learning from this operation, this unique situation we find ourselves in, but also being able to communicate with local elected and producers in any area that they may show up in, so that, again, we can have early, often conversations to try to avoid and minimize any potential for wolf livestock conflicts.
So next we have Elena, followed by Aaron Adelson, and then Shannon Lukens.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So considering the current challenges that CPW has faced so far with the wolf reintroduction plan, I'm curious if the plan is still to release as many as 15 more wolves between December 2024 and March 2025. And if that is the case, has the agency identified a source for where these wolves are coming from?
Let me clarify. And from my perspective, I think that we're doing well with our plan. Have we had some challenges in Middle Park? Yes. I just will continue to say to the public, we also have 9 more wolves that are doing wolf things out there. So I don't want to lose sight of that part. And the answer is yes. We are on track for, I think our plan says 10 to 15 animals for the first 3 to 5 years. Obviously, we'd like to get that in fewer years if possible, because that helps create that stable foundation for from which the population will grow into a sustainable population through time. And we're diligently working to find and finalize sources for the next few years.
So just to clarify, sources have been identified, but no one has been confirmed yet, or are you still searching for sources?
Sources have been identified, and we're working to finalize agreements for those animals for future release.
Okay, thank you.
So next we have Aaron Adelson.
Hello. Was hoping this would have been asked by now, but for months you guys rejected requests for lethal removal. Why is this all happening now, and how did you get to the decision to execute this plan?
Yeah, I think to answer that, it obviously took us a while to get an initial response put together for the request for chronic depredation landowner permit for removal. Around the timing of that, there was subsequent events that led us to believe that we needed to take some action from those additional events. And quite frankly, trying to thread a needle, Aaron, I'll say this maybe too many times, like this is truly a perfect storm. This is a very, very unique situation right out of the gate. And so I think it demanded a unique response in this regard. And part of that is making sure that the pups in particular have a second chance in the wild. Part of the timing in my mind is that this is about the time of year where pups will start going out on hunts with the adults. And what we didn't want is to see the pups going out on hunts with adults in situations where they may have been keying in on livestock as opposed to natural prey. So the timing was really kind of driven by a lot of factors, but that was one of the key factors in our mind. So how do we solve a problem for the ranchers that are dealing with the wolf livestock conflict? Also balancing the mandate is to essentially create a sustainable population of wolves in Colorado, and this seemed like a unique response to a unique circumstance.
Next, we have Shannon Lukens, followed by Leah Salvatera. Again, I apologize if I have mispronounced your last name. Followed by Ruben Schaefer.
There we go. Hello to all three of you. We're all media, and I've been asking for pictures, and it would be nice. We always use the pictures that you send us, and we would love to get some new pictures. You can control the pictures and send ones that are tastefully done, and I'm just wondering if we can get some sort of photos from this event today, the last few days.
Shannon, at this time, we do not have any photos to provide. Is that your question, or do you have another question?
That's my question. Can we please get some pictures of this event, even if it's a CPW truck in the field or, you know, far away, anything from the event?
Thank you, Shannon. Yeah, at this time, we just don't have any photos.
Okay, got it.
Next, we have Leah.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if those 15 other wolves that were being discussed are going to be released in 15 different locations, or how many locations are planned for those releases?
That detail is still being determined. It will probably do it in a couple of different places over a short period of time, but it's still to be determined on that. We used several different release sites in this last winter in December of 2023, all in relatively close proximity, and the wolves move pretty far distances away from all of those different areas. And so probably use something similar like that, maybe not necessarily the same spots, the same locations, but diverse geographic locations for the releases this coming winter.
Ruben, followed by Jennifer Yachin, followed by Katie Cheshire.
Hey there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful, thanks for doing this. Before the release plan was approved, the Southern Ute Indian Tribe asked the agency consider only the northern release zone. If the Copper Creek pack is released either in or near the border of the Bruneau area, will you notify or engage in discussions with the tribe in advance?
Absolutely. And right now we're looking at the northern release oval as an area. So we're not thinking that these animals would be released near the Bruneau area.
Got it. Thanks.
Next, we have Katie, followed by Allie Longwell.
Hi there. Katie with Westward here. I'm wondering what the cost for this operation from capturing the pack through holding and caring for the pups until they can be released will be, and if that amount will fit within the already planned budget for restoration this year.
I don't have a cost estimate. It's really staff time. The mobilization, chemicals, fuel. I'm not aware that we've had the time to put together those sorts of numbers.
Thanks.
And we have budget for this year.
And I apologize, Allie, before we go to you, I did skip over Jennifer. So Jennifer, go ahead.
Sorry, thank you for having this. I just wanted to ask, it mentioned in the statement that came out before the press conference that it was determined that the pups weren't involved in any of the depredations. And I wondered if you could talk through the details on how that was determined, particularly for the incident involving a number of sheep in late July.
Yeah, I'll take that. The pups are of an age right now where they're just not big enough to do that. They're 4.5 months old. They don't have, they have some adult incisors. Their front teeth have matured, but many of their teeth remain puppy teeth or deciduous teeth. And so they just don't have the behavior or the capability of being part of depredations at this point in time.
Next, we have Allie Long, followed by Matt Brown. And then Elise Schmelzer.
I was just wondering if you can clarify if the pups will be released together. You mentioned maybe releasing them in concert with some of the other reintroduced wolves later this year. I'm just wondering if you can kind of clarify that.
The plan would be to release the four pups together.
As siblings, it gives them a lot better survivability.
Next, we have Matt. I'm going to go ahead and skip over Matt. We'll come back to you in just a moment. Elise?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
What? Great. My question is, the male wolf died 6 days ago. Why did CPW decide to release this information now and not closer to the date of death?
I think a key factor in any of these operations is making sure that the safety of the staff and the animals are utmost of importance. And so saying it now, the operation's been, this phase of the operation at least has been concluded, and wanted to share the whole story with the public.
Okay, Matt, I'm gonna come back to you. So never mind.
There you are. Hey, Matt.
Sorry, there's so many buttons on this device. So I was asking, so in terms of how unique this is, obviously every depredation instance is unique, but it sounds like part of it was there's simply not a lot of wolves out there on the landscape. So if there were more wolves on the landscape, y'all might not have needed to relocate. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, I could spend hours probably talking about all the components of what unique is from my perspective. I think the fact that these animals paired up right away was a factor in my mind. They landed in this particular location. There's a unique component in that we had the adult male trying to supplement food to the female while she was in the den. You know, lethal management at that point would have made, and I think we said this before, would have put the female's health in jeopardy, but also likely had led to the mortality of the pups, and then be completely counter to the restoration component of what the law requires.
Next, we will have Michael Morrison, followed by Caroline Lanes.
Hi, yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, just in terms of looking ahead with more, not just the specific pack, but with more broad management, what are you guys kind of expecting, generally speaking, as we head, you know, into these fall and winter months, in terms of behavior, movement, anything big we should be keeping an eye out for?
Right now, we're in this situation where we've got a lot of just single wolves being around and being on the landscape. They're not associated with one another. There's not going to be any more packs. That we do not expect any kind of more pack formation. That happens. The breeding of wolves happens in February. They give birth in April, and that's how the pack structure is created. So right now, what's left are a lot of single, unpaired animals on the landscape. And so they'll probably continue to do some of the broad movements that we've seen this year. As we bring more animals in this winter, hopefully there's some interaction, some pairing, and some more breeding. But again, that won't happen again until next spring, the spring of 2025.
So we'll go ahead and go to Dennis, and then Michael, we'll come back to you again to see if we got you unmuted. So Dennis, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering what kinds of methods or means were used to capture these animals. And you made a reference to mobilization chemicals, so I didn't know if that was referring to darting and then reviving of animals, or did you use traps, or can you speak to that at all?
Yep, we used foothold traps to capture the animals, and then they were immobilized with a jab pole to provide them the immobilization drugs so that they could be handled and processed and weighed and so on, and then we're given a reversal to take that immobilization drug away from effect, and so they're placed in crates and then transported that way.
So, Michael, it does look like you'll need to accept the unmute on your end. But I'm going to go ahead and go down to, so next we have Stephanie, followed by Jayron, and that's Stephanie Butzer.
Hi there. I was wondering if you can explain how you're going to try to minimize human interference for the wolves that are in that facility right now, especially when it comes to prey and hunting and making sure they're not getting used to people.
The facility that they're at is not a place where there's a lot of people around at all. They're fed in the facility, but you know, people have to go in there to provide roadkill carcasses and so on. But that's the only interaction that happens very, very briefly and for a very short period of time, over not necessarily even every day. And so they're taking every precaution to keep them from getting normalized to human presence.
Thank you.
Next, we have Jayron, followed by Miles Blumhart, and then after that will be Scott Franz.
Although if I remember correctly, you mentioning the male wolf, the one that died, was the primary one with a history of depredation. We wanted to ask, with regards to the overall management plan as a whole, it says that wolves with known depredation history would not be re-released into the Colorado wild. Say if that male wolf did survive, where would you guys, what would happen to that wolf? Would it be like contained in an enclosure, or would it be moved into another state?
The plan for the male wolf was permanent captivity.
All right, thank you.
Next we have Scott, followed by Jeannie Lay.
Hi there, thanks for the time. My question is, state lawmakers, or at least some of them, are currently drafting a bill that would be a proposal to pause future wolf releases because of the livestock conflicts. I'm wondering if any lawmakers have reached out to y'all about that prospect and how a legislative pause might affect the restoration effort?
Yeah, so no legislator has reached out to me directly about such legislation. I've heard rumors of that. I think from how would it affect us? This is something that may be counterintuitive, but having more animals on the landscape allows greater management flexibility moving forward. I'm not sure Eric mentioned this or not, but as we get packs established, that's a lot easier to manage than individuals roaming around on the landscape, because those animals, packs will protect territories. So we'll know which animals are more directly involved in any sort of wolf livestock conflict. And they'll be able to more effectively take down natural prey. So my fear would be that we continue to see reductions in the numbers that we currently have out there, and put the entire implementation of the law in jeopardy moving forward. So I would also say that we have an opportunity to work together with the ranching community to truly do much more education, community outreach, deployment of non-lethals. I mentioned, I think, in my opening comments about site vulnerability assessments. So that would be CPW, CDA, Wildlife Services, working with ranchers to create plans up front. So they're proactively saying, here's where your type of operation is likely to see vulnerabilities, and here's the type of non-lethal techniques that we believe will be most effective in dealing with those conflicts should they arise. And then the other part of that is getting in very quickly at the onset of any sort of initial wolf livestock conflict, so that, again, this is, you're altering the behavior of the animals, and that's really what this is. And so that's going to be a critical step moving forward too.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. And I apologize, Miles, I did skip over you. So Miles, we will have you go next, followed by Jeannie Lay, followed by Rachel Gable.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hey, can you describe the type of foothold traps that you used and the length of chain that was used on those traps to catch that male, and who specifically or what agency or private contractor actually did the trapping? Thank you.
We used steel-like foothold traps with a drag on them, so they were not tethered chained to the ground right there. When the animal was in the trap, it pulled to a shady area. We worked with our own staff, CPW staff, biologists, veterinarians, district wildlife managers, and we had some training experience from Wildlife Services to help with the operation.
Can you say how long that drag chain was?
I thought it was 12 feet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next, we have Jeannie.
Hi there, this is Jenny Lay. I realize that this relocation of relocated wolves is a relatively extraordinary step to take, and extraordinary actions are probably justified based on the rarity of wolves in Colorado these days. But how do we not let something like this, having to relocate an entire, how do we not let this set a precedent? And how do you make it clear that that wolf removal can't be kind of a subsidy for business as usual?
Yeah, I think the key part to answer that is that we identify the unique nature of this situation, and that we can point to it. Again, this gets back to the other question about what happens if there's a pause. If we're literally going down in numbers of wolves, it makes the situation more difficult. It narrows kind of our management flexibility moving forward. And so getting more animals out on the landscape to help us get more packs established as soon as we can is going to be an important step. And I think the other thing, so we have the wolf ad hoc work group that we continue to work with, and a big important conversation we have coming up is lessons learned, right? So how do we take this unique situation, download kind of our shared lessons learned from the ranching community to the wolf advocates with CPW staff in the room having that conversation so that we can adaptively manage moving forward. And I think, again, I'll go back to more acceptance, like streamlining our processes for the types of permits or non-lethal equipment and the training needed is going to be an important next step for us, so that ranchers, again, have a game plan with us up front on a site vulnerability assessment. That's a voluntary thing for them to work with us on. And so we have a game plan going in. I also have to say, like, again, we have this particular pack in this unique situation, and then we have like other animals out on the landscape that aren't finding themselves in this type of situation. So I think it's going to take a lot more, a lot less finger pointing at folks, not throwing stones, but rolling up our sleeves and working together to make sure that this is a success. And when we say that in CPW, that isn't just a sustainable wolf population. That is a sustainable wolf population that avoids and minimizes impacts on the ranching industry. So that is our goal moving forward.
Next, we will have Rachel Gable, followed by Michael Morrison, and then we will wrap up with Kylie Moore.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Great. I know there's a regulation about wild animals that are trapped, like the wolves, can't go to a sanctuary or a refuge or something like that in the state, with the exception of the Denver and the Cheyenne Mountain Zoos. Is that a CPW regulation or statute? Where's that come from? And is that for all species?
Yeah, that's a CPW regulation passed by our Parks and Wildlife Commission. These wolves are still under the exclusive authority of Colorado Parks and Wildlife. They weren't given to a facility or a holding facility for permanent captivity or anything like that. They're still under our full authority, and that's what we're operating on. So they're not a permanent part of that facility.
So it does look like we will go ahead and we will wrap up with Kylie Moore. I apologize, Michael. It does look like we're having issues with getting you unmuted.
Hey, thank you so much for doing this. A lot of great questions already been asked. I'm with High Country News, by the way, but I would just like to ask about, I saw some reports that landowners near the PAC's den site and rendezvous sites were locking gates and preventing access for CPW staff. Can you discuss any difficulty in access you may have had with the ranchers and landowners prior to these relocation efforts?
So, sorry, Kylie, specific to this operation?
Specific to this pack prior to the operation, I was just wondering if those reports were true, if CPW was having difficulty accessing sites or interfacing with the ranchers and landowners nearby.
Yeah, I'm not aware that gates were being locked at all. This is private property, right? So CPW can't just stormtroop onto it and do what we need to from a wildlife management perspective. It's important that we cooperate with private landowners in this particular situation. We had to access multiple times from the public land, which is a steep slope, as I'm told, heavy timber, lots of deadfall. And so I know when we were monitoring the den site and the rendezvous sites, those were 15-hour days for our team to get in and get out of there. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
This concludes our question and answer portion.
I was going to ask the panelists if you have any other final words before we log off for the evening.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone from the media for taking the time and asking us the thoughtful questions. As you all know, this is a really important law that we're implementing it's important to CPW, and we have a very strong reputation for these efforts being successful. We're not going to fall short on this one. We know it's important to the ranching community that we work together and we do this right to meet that part of how we define success in avoiding and minimizing impacts on the ranching industry. It's obviously also really important to wolf advocates and folks that supported the law and the passage of the initiative. And then there's a whole lot of people in the general public that care about the wolves and the ranchers and the rural communities and the urban communities. And so that is what CPW is laser focused on, is good governance. And that means we govern for all in what we do every day. So I just appreciate you all taking the time and asking the thoughtful questions, and look forward to reading your stories in the coming days.
Thank you everyone for attending. If you do have additional questions, please feel free to reach out to your statewide or regional PIOs. And thank you again for joining.